going forward.
Ms. Dyster, take your time. It's not like I was punctual. Being late after I admonished the panel, don't ever be late, and who's Miss Punctuality? So, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. With that gavel, I have convened the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development for February the 8th, 2017. We are here for the purpose of a public hearing on House Bill 5036, the Oregon Racing Commission. I will open a public hearing on House Bill 5036 and ask the very capable Ms. Dyster to introduce the subject.
Okay. Welcome, everyone. I'm Michelle Dyster from the Legislative Fiscal Office. Today, we have the Oregon Racing Commission before us. This is a budget that is comprised completely of other funds, and what I mean when I say that is that their revenue comes from business licensing fees on wagering hubs and also on those who are entering in the race meets. It charges for services, fines and forfeitures. A portion of the bets that are placed also come in and count as their revenue. And they basically are here to present their 17-19 budget. You will notice that it is largely, the governor's budget consists largely of current service level. There were some small adjustments that were made. The agency did not request any what we call policy option packages, which are basically program enhancements, for the 17-19 biennium. It will be very much, I think you will hear, kind of a business as usual sort of budget for them. The industry is facing a certain number of challenges in terms of overall industry-wide participation, I guess you would say, or just in terms of the crowds that racing is drawing today compared to in decades past. But we are fortunate in Oregon to license what are called wagering hubs, and the Racing Commission is going to talk to you a little bit about that and why that's important. So, without further ado, I'm going to turn this over to the experts. I would also say, though, that if any of you ever have the opportunity to do a field trip or field work, it is absolutely fascinating. It is probably the most fun I've had going out to actually look and see what is done, what this consists of. There's a lot to it, and it's very interesting, very fascinating. Big fast horses, lots of people, and very
and now
cool.
For your interlude from the Tillamook Chamber of Commerce, you need to come to Tillamook. Racing is alive and well in Tillamook, and the really cool part about its integration into the county fair is the proximity to those magnificent animals and all the race activities. Portland Meadows.
And Madam Co-Chair, if I just can make it very clear, we're talking horses, not the other animals that are so prolific in Tillamook.
We're talking horses. Unlike Portland Meadows, which is a great place, but the action is pretty far away on a big television screen. In Tillamook, you can stand right next to the fence and have those fabulous animals come pounding down. It is exhilarating. And I would just add that, and on behalf of the other Tillamook rep, when racing and the fair are in Tillamook, you can hear cash registers ring like church bells. So, huge economic driver. And with that, I don't care what order you bat in. Always a pleasure to see you, sir. You can start your presentation.
Well, Madam Chair and co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Chris Dudley. I reside at 6140 Crooked Stick Loop, southeast in Salem, Oregon, and I'm a member of the Oregon Racing Commission.
And 50 million years ago, we lived about six houses away from each other.
That is correct. I remember you in swaddling clothes. But I shared my duties on the commission with current chair Charlie Williamson, who some of you know is a lobbyist here for years and is a lawyer from Portland. And also on the commission is Dr. Michael Huber, Corvallis veterinarian, who's a professor at OHSU's veterinary school. Jan Palmer, a Canby veterinarian and equestrian. And the newest appointee is Diego Conde, Lake Oswego, Happy Valley. I'm not sure where he's living now, but Lake Oswego attorney, who is also a horse owner from horses in other states. He can't do that in this state as long as he's on the commission here. We were established a number of years ago to oversee all of the activities related to paramutual racing, or paramutual activity in the state of Oregon. We've had a commercial meet in Portland for 70 years. And also, as was mentioned earlier, there are five different race meets around the state in what we call county or fair meets in Grants Pass, Union, Prineville, Tillamook, and Burns. These activities have had significant and still have significant economic impact on our state. It's a struggling industry, as was mentioned, and that's not an Oregon phenomenon. That's a national phenomenon, as you have more and more wagering opportunities that don't take quite as much activity as actually going to a racetrack or figuring out the bets you want to make. It has become more and more difficult. But I do want to commend to you a study that was done by Eco Northwest in 2012 that said in the year 2010, our industry contributed about $200 million to the economy of the state of Oregon. So it is not insignificant. And I'm pleased to serve on this commission. I've enjoyed my service there, and I think the commission's working pretty well in the interests of the citizens of the state of Oregon and the racing community itself. With that, I think it's our Executive Director, Jack McGrails. So.
Thank you very much, and welcome.
Thank you. Co-Chair Gomberg and Co-Chair Johnson and other members of the committee. I want to thank you for the opportunity to present the 2017-19 budget on behalf of the Oregon Racing Commission. My name is Jack McGrail, and I'm the Executive Director. With me is Karen Parkman, sitting behind me. She's the Program and Administrative Coordinator for the agency and has done a lot of the legwork in putting this presentation together. I also want to thank Michelle Deister, the LFO, and Robert Otero, our CFO budget analyst, for their assistance in this process. And, of course, former chair and present Commissioner Dudley for being here. Before we get into the slideshow, it's a pretty brief slideshow. I would like to offer some brief comment, which will hopefully give some context to those slides. And for those who, some of you were here a few years ago and we did this, for those who weren't here at any time during the session or at the discretion of the co-chairs, whenever you want to interrupt for a question or if we want to wait till the end, that's we'll defer to the committee on that. The horse racing, as Commissioner Dudley said, dates back a long time in Oregon. It dates back actually to 1861. Races were first held here in the state at the state fair. The commission was part of a paramutual wagering act, which was established in 1933. So there's a long history and tradition here of horse racing in the state, both at the commercial meet and at the fairs. The racing scene, as most of you probably know, is not as robust as it once was, but the commercial meet and the five summer meets continue to sustain that tradition. And we're optimistic that despite the stiff competition in gaming, in the gaming industry in general, that the trend is towards growing the sport. And we're grateful, actually, for the recent legislative help that we got, which we hope will bring back the racing and the breeding industry to the state. We are a very small agency, and we serve a very distinct industry that comes with some unique challenges and responsibilities. As Michelle noted, we're an other fund agency, self-supporting. We do project to deliver approximately $1.2 million to the general fund over the biennium. Funds not needed for our own operations are delivered back to the industry to support the product. And it is an economic engine here. You know, there is a trickle down from the what you see on the track to the farriers, to the hay guys, to the transportation people. So there is a significant economic impact that this industry has in the state. And as Commissioner Dudley noted, it was approximately $200 million based on the last economic impact study. There are essentially two components to our regulatory purview within the agency. First, we regulate all the live and simulcast racing and parimutuel wagering in the state. That would be Portland Meadows and its network of off-track betting sites. Those are the commercial race meet components. This past meet had 37 scheduled race days. You know, we had some extraordinary weather, as you all know, in Portland, and the winter didn't treat us that well, so we did have some race day cancellations. And in a short meet, that is significant. But we hope next year we'll get better racing, or better weather, so that we don't have to curtail the schedule. In addition to the live racing and the simulcast racing, the authorization of historical racing opened up a revenue stream, which was essential to this industry, frankly. If we're going to compete with any other state, the commercial race meet needed that influx of revenue. In addition to that commercial race meet, we regulate and support the five fair meets that, as noted, Union, Grants Pass, Prineville, Tillamook, and Burns. Those meets comprise the summer circuit, and there are 23 live race days spread out along the summer from June through September at these venues. These are vitally important to those communities. When we go, we just as an agency, fill up the hotels, we have restaurants, we have people there, and it brings in a crowd of people. So as Co-Chair Johnson mentioned, it is an economic driver for those, especially rural communities, like when you get out to Union or to Burns, for instance. So I think these are important events for those communities, and they let us know that. The Racing Commission actually funds all the purses for those meets, and we pay the majority of the jockey insurance premiums. We fund the racing secretary at the meet, and we provide all the regulatory personnel needed to run the race meet. That would include stewards, veterinarians, test barn technicians, investigators, licensing personnel. They're all on site for each of these five summer fair meets. And as was mentioned by Ms. Deister, I would certainly encourage anybody who's in any of those areas during our race meets to come out and just take in a day at the races. It's a exciting and welcome addition to the fair offerings. The second and really equally important regulatory component of the commission involves the licensing and regulation of those national and international advanced deposit wagering companies. Collectively, over $2 billion is wagered through the internet and these phone-based platforms of these companies. And this is out of a total of $11 billion wagered nationally. So it's a very significant percentage of the wagering dollar goes through the state of Oregon. As we go through the slides, I think you'll see the importance of these companies to the racing industry in Oregon. Oregon has attained primacy in the regulation of these entities. The license that we offer is the gold standard. It's the imprimatur of best practices and a high regulation. We employ a detailed regulatory scheme that ensures that the vendors are protected and the customers are protected, and we audit. The audit and compliance function is important. It's a great sport, and I think there are devoted horsemen and horsewomen in Oregon who are here. They don't make a lot of money, but they are here because they love the sport. And it's in the environment that we're in, the competitive environment for the wagering dollar and the gambling dollar. We appreciate all that the legislature has done, and we continue to work towards making this industry more successful here in Oregon. We have a short slide presentation, and as I said, I'm happy to answer questions either during the slide show or any time after, and at the committee's discretion.
Cool. Fire it up.
I'm not going to read those exactly what's on there. Some of these I will amplify a little bit, and again, if you have any questions as we go through it, feel free to jump in. That is a fairly vanilla but important mission statement. Paramutual wagering is about $300 million at the tracks during the year. And handle is the driving force behind purses in the industry. And we've seen a decline in handle over the years, but we hope that as these instant racing product delivers more purse money, we will grow the industry.
May I interrupt you as you're moving from slides? There's going to be an opportunity for public testimony, and I just want to make sure that those that are desirous of providing testimony know that there's a sign-up sheet, and I would respectfully ask you to indicate your desire to testify. Please continue.
Thank you. Promoting live racing and enhancing and jobs, and, you know, this has been an industry, as I said, Portland Meadows celebrated their 70th anniversary this year. So there's a long tradition both here and at the fairs. There are a number of safety initiatives that I have detailed. They're not detailed here, but we have a number of safety initiatives that are out there, including pre-race exams of horses conducted by the state vet. We hired a track consultant to review the fair meet track surface. We have several committees, both within the commission and on the tracks themselves, that include the jockeys and the trainers, to make sure we have a safe racetrack surface. And we have a necropsy program that Dr. Huber, Commissioner Huber, I think he started it, that any catastrophic injury is reviewed by with necropsy at Oregon State. The wagering system on, you know, I mentioned most of these points. The wagering system, we license 4 tote companies as well, including the largest tote companies in the world. Those are the companies that actually take in the bets, process them for a nationwide audience, and those would be M-Tote, United Tote, Sport Tech, and a small tote company that services the fairs, or in the past serviced the fairs, called Intermountain.
And where are those physical facilities located, or is it all electronic? Are there people somewhere in a room counting?
Co-Chair Johnson, they're located in Oregon. We have hubs for those where the information is processed, where they also have hubs in Louisville, Kentucky, and in Maryland, and in New Jersey. They are talking about, as this process becomes more, I guess, they're talking about going to the cloud with all this stuff, which I'm not really familiar with that, but that's the kind of thing that we have to, as an agency, look at when we license these folks, is are we protecting the integrity of the wager and the wagering public? And I have a devoted staff that looks into those. Now, right now, we conduct file reviews and external audits. There are SOC audits that are already conducted, and we review those audits before we license these folks.
Let me ask you one other question about that. Is there an audit trail? I mean, they're processing the heart of your business. Is there some credentialing or some bonding or some certification of these totes? How do you assure yourself that they're processing your data correctly?
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. The TRPB, which is the Thoroughbred Protective Bureau, Racing Protective Bureau, they are the national group that reviews and audits the tote companies. We conduct our own review of the what are called the SOC audits. So there are a number of checks and balances in there, and it's a redundant system. So when you have these companies being audited, it's not just the state of Oregon. It's also these are companies that are operating in major racing hubs as well. So the TRPB is one element. They have their own internal audit components, and we would look at that as well as the SOC audit reports that we get from companies like GLI, who do the GLI actually works for the Oregon Lottery as well in some capacities, and we have those reports at our disposal as well.
Thank you.
The horse associations, really what we're talking about there are the Oregon the Horsemen Benevolent Protective Association, which represents all the horsemen who run at these meets. We also have the Breeders Association, and they're represented here. I believe Linnell is here for the Oregon Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders Association. We have the Quarter Horse Association, and they're here as well. And these are all the participants in the industry, and they participate in all the industry forums, and we get feedback from them. We also fund most of these. We fund all of these groups with substantial resources that are committed so that they can run their programs. The Future of Racing in Oregon, just as an aside, I think they're a consortium of stakeholders that meet monthly. That includes the horsemen and the fairs, the tracks, the commission, jockeys. That brings together the whole industry, and typically that's a meeting once a month held at Portland Meadows. The organization chart, it's a fairly small group of people who participate as a agency personnel, but we have the veterinarian, and under there we have the assistant workers, the technicians who work in the test barn. Those are the people who actually take the samples from the horses that are being tested. We have the stewards, who are the main... They mainly run the race meets, both at the commercial meet and at the summer fair meets, and they're responsible. And on the ground, they're responsible. They're also responsible for watching each race and determining whether any fouls are committed. They're like the referees. In addition, they have overall authority over the race meet. Our accounting processes are really, that's where... Connie Wynn and Josh Derringer come in.
Did you declare your conflict?
Not yet.
Okay.
And then Karen, of course, runs everything from the office in Portland.
Madam Chair.
Representing me.
Yes, a question about your organizational chart there. I'm just curious why you have a state veterinarian and then the principal, then the senior state veterinarian, and they're not under the same line. That seems like a redundancy, and there's no, who does the state veterinarian, principal, executive, manager D, who do they report to? Who's underneath them? Who are they managing?
Co-chairs representative me. That's a good question. The Emilio DeBess and Dr. Friedman, those are actually what we call relief vets. We don't have them hired on year-round. The Dr. Cattler is our year-round state vet. The relief vets are hired for each individual race meet because they have to be there, because the preference is to have a veterinarian on the front side watching the horses as they come out, going to the starting gate with the horses, but also have a veterinary on the backside in the test barn itself. Occasionally, we are unable to get a relief vet, but those folks are the relief vets. So we don't really, they're not a full position. We hire them on a per diem basis.
Just follow up. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, it seems that those relief vets should be underneath the purview of the state, you know, your senior state veterinarian, right along with the other veterinarians, shouldn't they? As far as organizational charts,
I think we can certainly look into that. The people who are listed underneath the state vet are these, Dr. Kattler and Dr. DeBess, and those are they're very similar in authority once they're on the racetrack. The ones below that are the technicians who would be in the test barn itself and actually drawing blood or taking urine samples and securing those and getting them ready for transport. I can certainly look into that. I think you might be right. It should possibly go Dr. Kattler, then Dr. DeBess, and then under that would be the other.
Or maybe they split and.
Yeah, and I think in the past when we had a larger racing program, we only had 37 days, we used to have two full-time vets. So I think this chart may reflect that old system.
Okay. It just seemed out of line for me. But thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Please continue.
I think this composition of the ORC, I think it's fairly self-explanatory. One of the notable changes is that in the test barn itself, at the fairs, we made a change 2 years ago, or last year maybe, to staff that with exclusively Oregon Racing Commission employees. It's a fairly, I don't want to say dangerous, but you're in there in an enclosed area with a horse, and it was determined that it wasn't really appropriate for volunteers from the fairs to be manning that position. So now, both for safety and to ensure proper handling of samples, we have a staff personnel handling all the test barn duties. And those are important duties because you need chain of custody issues, and then they go to the investigators who transport them to the appropriate laboratory for testing. So that is really, there hasn't been much change except for that, but that is a notable change. Funding streams, I think that was mentioned by Michelle. There's a licensing fees that the ADWs are the main driver of these of the revenue for the Oregon Racing Commission. Charges for services, those are the what are we call outs, those are the tickets that are not actually cash but are winning tickets. So if somebody drops their ticket on the ground and thinks it's a loser but it's actually a winner, we actually win, but and with electronic wagering, we will probably lose some of that because as you wager through a computer or on your own account, there's no ticket to lose. So, but it is a significant source of revenue for the agency. The parimutuel receipts from racing and historical racing, that is the 1% that the commission gets from each wager that's made at Portland Meadows. And that 1% goes directly to our operations. The last line of the parimutuel receipts from ADW companies, that is the money that we are able to distribute back to the industry participants, including all of the five fairs and all of the organization groups that make up the racing industry in Oregon. On these key performance measures, I think we have achieved a very low catastrophic injury rate, extremely good this year. Those are some, I think we can take some credit for that, for all the initiatives we have for safety. Some of it is strictly, some of it's just luck, racing luck. I mean, you can have the best surface and the best horses, but a horse can clip heels and go down, and then you'll have a catastrophic injury, and it's something we all, it's a bad situation. But we do everything we can to prevent that, and right now we're at we're well below the national average.
May I interrupt you, Representative Gomberg?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Thank you for this information. I noticed that the animal safety KPM is articulated in terms of injuries, or I should say fatalities per 1,000 starts. How many 1,000 starts do we have per year? I'm trying to put that number into a rather focus rather than a percentage.
I can do the math. Co-chair Gomberg, let me see if I can do the math in my head. Over, if there's a 37-day, you probably have 370 races or so, 350 to 370 races at Portland Meadows. And then over the 23 days of racing, you probably have somewhere around 200 races. In the biennium, you're probably talking about 1,200, in that range. It depends on how many races they run to get a precise figure. I certainly can get you that figure and email that to you when we get back to the office.
So 1,200 races, and I'm sorry, I'm having trouble with the math myself.
What we're trying to figure out, I think, is how many fatalities have.
You're listing 0.55 fatalities per 1,000 starts. How many fatalities did we have last year?
Do you have that number?
And while she's thinking that, let me ask a follow-up if I may. It looks to me like your number of fatalities in the last 3 years, you're reducing that by 50% a year from 2.08 down to 1.07 down to 0.55. So it looks to me like you're moving substantially into a much more safe direction.
Thank you, Representative Gumberg. I think we are. I do think that, you know, we did have some issues with this past Portland Meadows meet that aren't part of these calculations, and that's where when I say some of it is our safety initiatives, and I do applaud our stewards and the horsemen and the participants and the racetrack itself, but I think some of it is simply that you didn't get those unfortunate accidents that can happen even when you do the best job you can possibly do if a jockey clips heels and the horse goes down. I think, to your point on some of these things, we monitor the National Medication Program. We adopt some of those initiatives. We attend all of the conferences, including the ARCI conference and the RMTC conferences. We have track safety committees at each of the tracks. We hired Steve Wood, who was a noted track consultant. He actually built Santa Anita. He was a track consultant at Del Mar. I shouldn't say he built Santa Anita. He was a track consultant at Santa Anita and at Del Mar, and has built tracks in Dubai and all over the world. And we got him because he has retired and he wants to help out the industry, and we were able to get him to look at all of our racetracks over the summer fair circuit, and it's been a terrific addition to what materials should be added, what safety cushion should be there. You know, these tracks only run, some of them only run 3 or 4 days for the entire year, so we need to get him on the ground there and looking at it and grooming the track and making sure that it's safe for the animals.
So thank you, Madam Chair. I'm happy if they get back to me later with some numbers.
Thank you. If you would provide that to the professional staff, and Ms. Deister will make sure it's disseminated to the entire committee.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The budget drivers, I think, you know, as mentioned, the paramutual wagering is trending down slightly, although the national trend has gone up over the past year, and we're hoping that kicks in here in Oregon. We continue to maintain our status as the primary regulator of ADWs, and as long as that continues, we'll be able to maintain our funding and our budget. And we hope it'll grow regionally and the breeding and racing industry will come back. So I think we are making progress. Impact on local rural economies, I think that's, Co-Chair Johnson mentioned that the cash register, they're ringing in Tillamook and And especially in Prineville, where they have a tremendous four nights of racing. They had record handle this year. It's a very, very important event for that community. And they do record crowds. And when I say handle, that's the amount of money that's bet through the windows. And that is a really fun, it's the only nighttime racing in Oregon. And they know how to have a good time in Prineville during the racing season.
Who does any marketing for, are you all involved in helping to market the fairs, or do the fairs market the racing? I just don't recall from your budget whether or not there's anything in there for public outreach to encourage people to participate in Pyramid racing.
Madam Co-Chair, the funds that we give to the fairs, there's a line item for publicity and that type of, however they do it themselves, we do provide funds for that effort, whether it's advertising on the radio or in print or social media. So we do provide monies for that to each of the fairs. Okay. The commission itself does not advertise them. We simply put their information out there on our website showing when the dates are.
Thank you. Please continue.
This is actually giving you just a little overview of the changes in the past 10 years due to the decline in the number of race days at the commercial meet. We've actually reduced staff. It has had a limited impact on our licensing turnaround time, because we've consolidated both the investigation and the licensing into one department. We used to have a separate department to do licensing. We just don't have the manpower, and there are not enough racing days to justify having those two separate departments. And in addition, we did not refill and investigate. We had three investigators. And when we got a retirement, we did not refill that position, so we're down to two investigators. We did add, from an existing position, we added some hours for that person to help with the licensing part of it. Licensing is typically it gets busy at specific times of the year, just before the race meet opens at Portland Meadows, or just before the races at each of the fairs. People want to renew their licenses to be able to compete.
Please continue.
Thank you. I think this is it's still pretty self-explanatory, the budgetary issues that we're facing. The crucial role of the assessments that we collect through advanced deposit wagering, that's about $2.6 to $2.8 million that we deliver to the industry from that revenue source. The fairs are, about $1.4 million goes to the fairs over the course of the biennium, and that's exclusive of all of the personnel and staff that we put on the ground for each of those fairs to support those fair meets. Other groups get about slightly less than that, maybe $1.3 million over the biennium. We have no new legislation. We do appreciate, as I mentioned, the passage of two important legislative pieces in the last couple of years, both for historic racing and one that changed the percentage from 66 2/3 to 75%. Of ADW assessments that was retained by the commission for distribution to the industry.
While you don't have any legislation from the agency, are you aware of any legislation that has been introduced this session that might have an effect on your budget?
Co-Chair, Madam, I'm not aware of any. I do I am going to look into, there was a bill last session regarding dog racing, which if that comes back, and I'm not sure if it is back, that I think might have an impact. Some of our ADW operators really rely on that product. I don't know what the dovetail or the connection between our ADW operators offering that and a law in Oregon. We also have the simulcast at Portland Meadows, and because, you know, dog racing, as I'm sure you all know, was very big here in Oregon for quite some time, and there are a lot of wagers placed on dog racing from other tracks at Portland Meadows when they're betting in tracks sent through the simulcast from Florida or Tennessee or straight to West Memphis.
All right, colleagues, any questions of the agency? Senator Hansel.
More of a statement. I know as a former county commissioner how important racing revenue was to Umatilla County, even though we didn't have a facility that I think you said other counties share in the results or the income. So I remember the racing dollars being very important to us, and thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Gomberg.
Thanks. Again, I'm looking at the key performance measures, and I'm looking at the turnaround time for applications. And it looks like over the last couple of years, you were hitting your 5-day turnaround target pretty well, and then in 2015, bumped up to twice that much, 10 days. I don't have any data for 2016. What's the story on turnaround time for applications?
Representative Gomberg, co-chair, I think the explanation there is we've had staff reductions. We used to have a full department for licensing. That department was consolidated with the investigators. And after that consolidation took place, we also reduced our investigative staff to two. We did, in this past year, move some, or allocated some more human resources over to the licensing side because we had that position available from a test barn personnel, so we moved that person in and trained them to do licensing. Licensing, it gets very busy and very short spurts or intervals, and then there'll be nothing for quite some time. So we are trying to address that, but with our budget constraints and our manpower, it was a challenge.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
All right, colleagues, any other questions? Senator Monroe.
Yeah, I have a proprietary interest because Vestal Monroe is my daughter-in-law, and she works for Portland Meadows. I have heard it said there's Portland Meadows has been kind of running in a tenuous way for some time, it sits on a very valuable piece of industrial land, and there's been talk over the years that land might be available for some other use and Portland Meadows might cease to exist, and I'm trying to make sure that doesn't happen, of course, but I've heard it said that Portland Meadows is absolutely essential to the whole horse racing industry and related businesses throughout the state. Can you comment on the relationship between Portland Meadows and its existence and the county races, the five county races that you hold, and also the horse racing industry, raising, breeding, veterinary, and so on? And I'm also interested in whether or not the business of recreational ownership of horses is in any way related, and if so, how. I have a sister-in-law that has a horse out and farm. She lives in Salem here, and she has a horse that she goes out and rides and sends us pictures of frequently on Facebook and so on, and she loves that horse. And I know there's a lot of people across the state of Oregon that for recreational purposes own horses. They don't race them. They're not race horses. They're just horses. Is there any relationship between your industry, the horse racing industry, and kind of the private ownership of horses and maintenance of those horses and the farms that board those horses and so on?
Co-chairs Johnson, and Senator Monroe, I think to answer the first part of that question, I believe that Portland Meadows is actually the linchpin of the industry here in Oregon. It allows the horsemen and women to bring a horse to the racetrack 30 days in advance and have a place to stable and train. Usually that's 30 days in advance of the race meet starting. So in that case, that would be late August of this year. And then those horses are able to stay and train up and race through, in this case, it was mid-January. January 3rd was the actual closing date. It was extended several times because of weather cancellations, and we moved it. But it gives a place for these horses to go and
Thank
to
you.
Compete and to possibly earn some purse money. As I said, most of the people in Oregon who are racing horses, they understand they're doing it because they love the sport, they love the game. But they also want a chance to at least break even or offset some of their probable losses. And that Portland Meadows is there and allows that to happen. The purse money that is provided is important. And without Portland Meadows, I think you'd see a serious decline in the number of horses available to run at the fair meets. Usually the horses that run at the fair meets have competed at Portland Meadows. The ones, the better ones, they may go up to Emerald Downs or maybe go to some other racetrack. But the ones who aren't quite as competitive, they will be the ones who fill those fields at these fair meets. To keep that horse year-round for a short fair meet season, I think would be extraordinarily expensive. I don't know that many people would have that wherewithal to do that. So I think the importance of Portland Meadows really can't be overstated. In terms of that value of the property and the kind of, you know, the tenterhooks we're on all the time, whether or not they're going to, you know, ask for another license for next year, you know, I'm aware that there is possibility that at some point Portland Meadows decides that property is too valuable to run a racetrack at. I think everybody in the industry is aware of that. That's kind of a given. And running a race meet in a urban setting is a difficult task anyway, because you have environmental issues and whatnot that go along with that make it more expensive, water issues. So, you know, we're hoping that with the historic racing that the legislature allowed couple years ago, that will be enough of a revenue generator for them to say, no, this is a good racetrack. We want to keep it. Yeah. And it's a Stronach Group racetrack, and they own some of the best racetracks in the country. So they're a good steward for racing. They like racing. So we're optimistic and hopeful that they will continue.
They're Canadian-owned, right?
The Stronach Group is, excuse me, Senator Monroe, the Stronach Group is based in Canada, although they have operations all over the country, including their U.S. operations based in Florida, and they own Gulfstream Park, that big racetrack down between, it's in Hallandale, between Miami and Fort Lauderdale. They also own Santa Anita and Pimlico and Laurel, so they're in Golden Gate in San Francisco. So they're a very good steward for racing. Will they sustain, keep this place if it keeps losing money? I mean, it's hard to say. In terms of the recreational ownership of horses, I think the industry itself supports so many tack shops and veterinarians you know, that I think there's a connection between the two. I don't have any calculus or any data to support that. I just know that when you have 600 to 800 horses on the grounds at Portland Meadows, you draw feed people and horse tack people and farriers and veterinarians and those people who will support the other side, which is the saddle horse and the pasture horse that, you know, that is prevalent here in Oregon.
Thank you very much. Chair will ask that the record reflect Senator Monroe has declared a potential conflict of interest given that his daughter-in-law works for Portland Meadows. All right.
Madam Chair?
Mr. Dudley.
Also, my daughter Kyla, who lives in Redmond, has her second retired racehorse that she uses as a pleasure horse. So there is a life after racing for a number of these animals in our state.
Thank you very much. All right, if there are no other questions for the agency, we will turn to public testimony. Mr. Dudley, you have signed up. Have you provided your testimony, or do you wish to testify again?
I'm tapped out.
Testified out. All right, in that case, we will ask Linnell Smith. Why don't the three of you come up together? Linnell Smith, Dave Nelson, and Cameron Benjamin, if the three of you would come up together. Oh, do we want to take that now, or okay? Mr. Otero, I may have gotten us slightly out of order here. I'm going to take the public testimony first. Could I ask you to withdraw to the cheaper seats, and we'll have you back up?
Yeah, certainly.
Thank you. All right. So again, I renew the request for Ms. Smith, Mr. Nelson, and Mr. Benjamin to come forward.
Madam Chair, Mr. Benjamin just told me that he just wanted to attend and say I support. I don't need it.
All right. Noted for the record. Cameron Benjamin is here. And
you shut up.
All right. Noted for the record. Cameron Benjamin is here, declined the opportunity to testify, but supports the agency. Great. Good. All right. We got the high sign from Mr. Benjamin. All right.
Great. Good afternoon. I'm Linnell Smith. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders Association. Our association represents owners and breeders of Oregon-bred thoroughbreds throughout the state. In recent years, the Oregon legislature has supported the horse racing community by providing and passing vital legislation that has kept the industry alive. The Oregon Racing Commission has distributed those funds from the legislation to the stakeholders in the industry. Our association has received funds that has enabled us to increase purses, reimburse full registration fees, and provide incentives that have kept breeding alive in the state. On behalf of our board of directors and our owners and breeders, I urge your approval of the Oregon Racing Commission's biennial budget. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions of Ms. Smith? There being none, Mr. Nelson.
Chair Johnson, Chair Gromberg, members of the committee, I'm Dave Nelson. I live at 7479 Nelson Lane, so I'm the real Dave Nelson. For 30 years, I represented Portland Meadows. Going back to the early 1970s, I would make the comment that having known all of the racing commissions from that time forward and worked with them, that we probably have the best group of people that we have had as members of the Oregon Racing Commission, a great staff, and they do a good job. They're engaged, they know their business, and do a good job of regulating the industry. Having said that, I represent the Oregon Quarter Horse Racing Association, and I see a favorable reaction up there, and so I'm going to shut up.
Thank you very much. Any questions, colleagues? Quit when you're ahead. Yeah. All right, that concludes the people that have signed up for public testimony. Did the spirit of testifying move over anyone? Seeing no takers, we will close the public testimony and ask for Mr. Otero to come up from Department of Administrative Services, Office of the Chief Financial Officer, and give us your comments about the agency. Welcome.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Mr. Otero does have some a couple of slides he'd like to share that are associated with the governor's budget and what is recommended for the Racing Commission.
Thank you very much. I see Mr. Naughton lurking in the back of the room. Would you like to join us, or are you happy back there?
I'm happy lurking.
Thank you very much. All right. Mr. Otero, please proceed.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. Co-Chair Johnson and Co-Chair Gomberg and members of the committee, my name is Robert Otero. I'm with the Chief Financial Office. See if we get this presentation right.
That's a lovely picture of the Capitol.
So this presentation you're about to see is basically a highlight of the governor's budget for the Oregon Racing Commission. What this presentation will do is orient the committee on the any changes and investments in the governor's budget. Okay. The agency's emerging issues. Basically, as the agency stated, the core of racing is the demographics and cultivating new support with new generations coming in is one of the greatest challenges. And then second is regulating all aspects of the paramutual racing industry. What the governor's budget is maintain the current operations for the agency. This chart represents the expenditures for the agency. As you can see from the 2015-17 legislative approved budget to governor's budget, there's just a slight change, which basically accounts for inflation for the agency. This is a breakdown of the agency's budget by expenditure category. One of the largest expenditures is special payments, which accounts for going out to the county fairs and supporting the racing industry. Then mainly is, after that is personal services, staffing costs, and services and supplies for the agency. Finally, the governor's budget makes some statewide adjustments to the DAS price list and state government service charges for the agency. And so what that does is reduce some expenses for the agency and brings their overall limitation down.
Mr. Chair, for the benefit of new colleagues and members new to the legislature, could you describe the DAS price list and state government service charges, please?
Yes. Co-Chair Johnson and members of the committee. So the DAS price list consists of two components. You have the state government service charges, which is the assessments and the basically fees for service. The assessments are basically comprised of various state government agencies, for example, Treasury and the Chief Financial Office has assessments for rates. And then the other component is fees for service, which could be that the agency has accounting services that their small agency, such as the Racing Commission, that has uses accounting services, so they're charged a usage fee.
Colleagues, new colleagues, is that clear that what these are? Good. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Otero.
That concludes my presentation. Are there any other questions?
Lovely. Colleagues, any questions?
I would just note for the record that OLIS actually has real estate's governor's presentation posted under today's meeting materials, so I will get that switched out as soon as I get back to my office so that you will have this at your disposal for the correct agency.
Mr. Meek just thought they were so important that we wanted to see them twice.
Twice, yes.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Otero. Any questions?
Thanks.
Representative Reardon.
Could you tell me the value of the net assets of the under the commission's control, all their property and buildings and stuff?
Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair Gomberg, and Representative Reardon. I do not have that information at this moment, but what I could do is work with the agency and LFO to get you the information you need.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Let's ask the agency if they have anything to offer. It's going to be a not very much, I would presume. Would you join us again, agency, Mr. McGrail?
Thank you. Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Representative Reardon, was it your question?
I'm just trying to get a feel. We had a discussion earlier about the land that was owned, you know, the value of the industrial land, and you probably have other buildings and so forth. So I was trying to just get a feel for the amount of assets under your organization's control.
Thank you, sir. We actually don't own any assets, really. We have very limited numbers of things under our control. The Portland Meadows facility is owned by the Shronach Group, along with several heirs.
Okay.
And it's a fairly convoluted ownership group, but we don't own any of that. We don't own any. We lease our space in the state office building, but for assets, we basically have what.
Okay, great. I'm glad I asked, Ken.
Yes, thank you.
Good. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, there being none, thank you very much for your time and effort put into the presentation. And Ms. Deister, you want to bring us home?
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, we will be bringing this budget back for likely Phase 3, which would be our work session, sometime after you have gotten through all of the other initial presentations from the agencies that are whose budgets have been assigned to this subcommittee. So you will likely see them back, I would guess, sometime in March, and it'll be, you know, perhaps a bit of a stretch to go back and remember some of that, but all of these items will continue to be a part of the record and available on OLIS for your to jog memories and for your edification. And in the meantime, if something comes up, questions that you have that you didn't think to ask today, please don't hesitate to get in touch with me. And I'm sure I speak for Mr. McGrail when I say that the agency is also always happy and available to answer any specific questions that you may have.
Thank you very much, Ms. Deister. Anything for the good of the order? Colleagues, I will not be with you tomorrow. I am honoring a speaking engagement that I have that will keep me away from committee, so with apologies, I will not be with you. There being no other business, we're adjourned.